Down to Brass Tacks, I'm David Ellis. With me is Reverend Guy Hewitt, and we're going until 1:30. A principal of a school actually shared with me a concern. He said that being a principal in 2018 is a relentless burden of pressure, which seems to have no end in sight. This person says that they're into week 6 of the school term, and they have been given no money from the ministry, no supplies from the ministry. Hence, there is no chalk. There's nothing for the janitors to work with. And this person says that they are presently using their own resources to run the school and keep it clean. And the hurtful part of this is that no one from the ministry reaches out to find out how you are getting by. Teachers expect that when they ask for something, it will be provided. And the person says that they are into fundraising like a business. The situation is extremely stressful. I have done all that I can to make life easy for the parents, many of whom have 3 and 4 children in this school. And they point out that scheme books and registers that were needed from the start of the school year were only issued this week. So there is pressure all around. So the BUT says their people not going home. But that's not the only part of this story, you know. There are other stressors. And this person says on September 27th, they got a WhatsApp notice stating that the West Terrace Post Office would be closing until further notice to, quote-unquote, facilitate renovations. This post office services a very large area, including West Terrace and West Terrace Gardens, Wanstead, Husbands, Oxnards, Haynesville, and Paradise. To date, there are no signs that any renovations are taking place at the post office. This unfortunate closure is causing a major inconvenience to the persons using that post office, many of whom are retirees who now have the added hardship of having to go to either Warren's Towers or Eagle Hall to conduct business such as paying bills or changing their pension checks. This is down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. This is, I didn't really want to call back in on the program, but I just want to deal with the issue that after I heard the lady call in and talk about having to sign a document without properly reading it,
yes,
I found myself in a situation only this Wednesday, I think it was. Let me go back a little bit. I received welfare assistance because obviously I'm on medication, but the thing is with the medication, because of the side effects, it hampers me from living a normal life.
Okay.
There are not many people who believe me because if you look at me from the outside, you can't really tell. And people really don't have time for people once you are not up and on the go. But the other issue is that where I live, I tend to get my post late. So, as usual, my welfare check came late. However, when I got it, I did not open it because it was so late. I thought that it would be the following Friday that I would get to change my check, whereas the time had already passed. Anyway, I went for food assistance, and I was given a welfare check of a food voucher for $150. I was given the choice of going to 3 supermarkets. Because, again, of a disability with my hand, I decided to go to one close to me and one that I knew had a shuttle service. I will not call the name of the supermarket. Now, I know that in Barbados, coming up from a child, I always heard Barbadians say, you can't be a beggar and a chooser too. And as one of your moderators would have said, that going to welfare can be, and not only the welfare, the other people you go to, it can be a very dehumanizing experience. But if there's one thing that mankind has to do to survive, is to eat, to stay alive, and I have to take medication. So I chose to go for the voucher. Anyway, when I got to the the supermarket. I went to the relevant person and I showed her the voucher and she would have seen how much it was supposed to be for. I went, I picked up my shopping, blah, blah, blah. Which, not just mentioning, by the way, when I got there, the lady said to me, well, I still had a few other money open to me that I could pick up a few more items. So I went and I picked up three more things and it went over by $2.75. This is my issue I'm calling, but I'm just mentioning that part. However, she said to me, it went over by two. No, I really didn't have any money in my purse to say, like, probably maybe $5, if that much. So I said, well, $2, I can risk giving her $2. Then she said $2.75. Okay, I gave her the $2.75, but because there was a shuttle service, I didn't really, you know, worry about that, so I would get the shuttle service and go home. However, when I got to the, I had to go down to another lady to sign that I had received the goods. The lady pushed this book at me and said to sign here. So I signed my first name. And then when I looked, I decided to read what I was signing. It had that I had received for 100 and there was nothing after the and. So I said to her, but you have not put what I have, you know, what I am paying for. She said, well, it's only $150, so that's all you could be signing for. So when I went to read, but I realized, know, that this could become a little, you understand what I'm saying, like back and forth.
Yeah.
And I know that because I am the person at the mercy of the government, I may very well get the bad. And I can get, when I talk, people tend to get the wrong impression of me. So I ended up signing it. But on hindsight, I still don't think that I should have signed it. I have the duplicate.
Because you signed before you read.
No.
Oh,
no,
you,
no.
Okay. So when you,
I signed half my name.
You signed half your name?
Half my name.
And then read.
And then I read the top part. So she left off the 50. She only had 100 and. So I said to her, but I shouldn't be signing this because you don't have how much the voucher is for.
Yeah, but the point that you're making, though, ultimately is that you need to read the document before you sign.
I agree with that, right? But she bullied me. And what I'm saying is, even though I signed that, she can write anything on that form, which could probably prohibit me from getting further help in the future. Very well may not be. She may very well put what was available or how much I spent, because I only spent $2.75 over.
But you retreated, don't forget. You said she bullied you, but you didn't want to have a back and forth with her, so you decided to retreat. There are other people who might have insisted that the matter be clarified.
There was a manager there. He looked like a manager, and he didn't even get involved. I don't know.
But you didn't ask him to get involved either.
Sorry.
Because you were fearful that it could have gone in a direction that would have disadvantaged you in the future. So in those circumstances, some other people would have said, look, let me clarify this once and for all. Instead, you said, I don't want to be involved in a fight over this, so let me back away. Agree?
Yes.
That's basically what happened. So you now need to be on your P's and Q's to establish whether something else will come of it.
I have always been very cautious in terms of signing documents. I don't care how simple it is. I mean, I can give you a very horrible incident that I went through where a document was pushed at me,
okay,
and it was told to sign.
But the underlying point is made, though. We don't necessarily need to go into another scenario.
I won't go into it, but I'm saying that there's some very... So I guess it's people out there to warn people that even in today's age, you know, that there are people out there... Because there was a time when people
but you need to be cautious
because they couldn't read.
You need to be cautious at every level. That's all that, you know, that point is very well made. Thanks very much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Hello?
Miss Ellis?
Oh, my friend, how are you?
Oh, I am tremendously blessed.
Amen.
And I want to wish you and the station and your family in Barbados the best for the weekend. And the new, well, I said new, of course, I'm not sure if he's going to be new. Mr. Hewitt, who is going to be, I believe,
I invited
someone said,
Reverend Hewitt as a guest. Are you doing
okay. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure, so that's
but of course, saying, if you listen to the answer that he gave to his interest in political office today, I suspect the same thing might apply to this particular role. If, you know, asked to serve, I expect that he would be willing to serve, but we haven't gotten there up to this point.
And I'll tell you, I want to add, And I want to admire him for what he said, because this is a clear demonstration of a man who loves his country and is willing to do what is absolutely necessary for his country. This is what we are all about. I believe that we should be, whoever we are, regardless of whichever government is in office. This does not mean that if the particular government or party is doing something or things that we are concerned about, we should not hear them. Because it's Barbados.
This is all part of your run-up, though. I know that when you start to deliver, it is much quicker than this. And it bounces quite fiercely. So let me get the delivery now that you have passed, you know, given the run-up.
All right. Now, I've heard, this is not going to be my major thing, I've heard in Parliament today a minister saying, talking about how slow it is to do business in Barbados for the last 10 years.
Yes.
Ms. Ellis, I think that is very, very ingenuous in that it's not only the last 10 years.
That's true.
Barbados has always had a deficiency and a problem in business accommodation.
Has it gotten worse, though?
No, look, listen to me.
Or has it remained static?
Look, don't let us stumble with it. It has always been like that.
Let's concede that.
I'm not saying that it's not continuing to be that, and it should be that way. Mm. But when you are going to be emphasizing that, because you know what the impression is given?
Well,
that is the last government that has really caused this. I mean, this is not nice.
That is politics. You know? And you know, there are some things that you got to recognize, that you let them go outside the off stump in cricketing terms.
Okay, now.
Don't waste time with something like that. You see that for what it is. And there is nobody in Barbados who would look at what has happened. I've been around here in 1994 period, 91 elections. 1991, it was? 94? Anyhow, the election in the 90s after the fall of the Sandy Ford administration and stuff. I think it was 94. I remember being at a BLP meeting down in Hinks Street. And all back then, the talk was about how slow it is to get business done in Barbados. So I agree with you. But the question that you must also ask is, has it gotten worse? And I don't know what Reverend Guy has to say, but what's your other point, though?
Yeah. Now, let me put this to you. Let me ask you. Do you believe that it would show any love and concern of yours and respect for you to go ahead and make a pre-marriage arrangement for your daughter without her having an input into it, and then present that to her and say to her, whether you approve of it or reject it is the same. Do you believe that would be any kind of love, concern, or care, or respect for her?
Where's the analogy? Come on.
I'm just asking a question first.
Well, that depends upon your culture. You know that there are cultures around the world where arrangements are made for young women to get married, the Indian culture, parts of, you know, the Hindu culture and stuff. So it depends.
Tell me what you are linking it to. Don't go off about any Indian culture. I ask you, as you and Mr. Ellis, in a question.
In the context of Barbados,
in
the context of Barbados, I would not be making any arrangements of that type for my daughter or any of my daughters.
My daughters
would be expected to be the ones to come and say, listen, this is what I propose to do. And basically, where do you stand in relation to this? What assistance may be required? But I am not making those arrangements for anybody.
Good.
In the context of Barbados. I want to see you linking it to, though.
Here, so the answer is no. don't be a coward.
What is it linked to?
Now, hear this. On Wednesday, I sat and I listened to the debate in the upper house. And I heard the opposition, the lady, I don't know, I can't remember what her name is. I think she sits with Mr. Franklin. And she read from a document. And this is about the restructuring of the loan, the debentures and so on. And she read from, she said, page 6. I don't remember exactly which paragraph it was. And it read that whether you accept the exchange rate or not, it is the same. Miss Ellis, when I heard that...
You were hearing that for the first time?
No, listen to me. When I hear that...
You discuss that, right?
I tell myself, I say, wait, now God has made us and give us a choice, every human being. And for you, when I say you, for anyone to have imposed something like that, I call that dictatorship and bullying to a person, you've taken away their choice from them. I ask myself, where is the human faith? Miss Ellis, how could you put something like that to people? And you know what is ridiculous about it? You say to them, I am going to talk to you all the way. But you know when you talk to them? After you have gone ahead and done these things. Now tell me the truth, Miss Ellis. Do you consider that to be just? No, I don't want you to tell me about another culture. Do you consider that to be just to another human being? Don't tell me the facts.
May I ask you a question?
Don't divert.
I hope I am not diverting.
Then you answer it.
Wasn't it not linked to what a majority of the people said?
I just asked you a question. You see what I'm saying? Look, I want you not to be a coward and try to avert and divert. Don't be like that. You are a man. Stand as a man. And if something is wrong, don't be afraid to say that. You may be criticized, but say that it's okay. But it's coming from your heart. It's coming from you. If you believe it is wrong,
and not only that,
you point out where it is wrong.
Okay, let me ask you something. When it comes to voting, you find yourself in a situation where the majority, the party that gets the majority, becomes the government. Even though a minority, and sometimes a sizable minority, says no, you still get the government that the majority has chosen. We had a situation in 2013 where the government of the day won by just 2 seats, a 2-seat margin. But we had to live with it. Tell me, what's the difference?
The difference, you see, two differences in that, and I'll show you why you cannot put all two of them on even keel.
Now tell me why not.
The other government had a choice and they gave that choice.
So right, with it's the majority opinion, right?
No. But what you're doing now, you have taken away the choice from the people. This is completely different.
In a scenario where it might have had the popular vote, or the Dems for that matter, you get the popular vote, but you don't have enough seats. The other party gets more seats. What happens then?
In our democracy, we go by seats.
But people would feel as though they were cheated of what they considered to be their choice.
No, but they know what the law is.
As I said to you, there are scenarios where you feel as though, the minority should still have a say. But it is a democracy. If you say the majority will carry the sway, if you say if 75% of the people who have a vote say yes, the other 25% will have to go along with it. That is the norm.
You know what? You see, I believe that we are all human beings and we should treat each other with respect accordingly.
Okay.
If one person says, take every cent I got, I have, and do what you like with it, and the other person say, don't touch me a cent of mine.
Yeah, but you know what you are going to introduce there. You can introduce an element that will ultimately frustrate the whole process and you will go nowhere.
So bully them.
It is as much bullying as people who did not favor the Democratic Labor Party in 2013 having to live with it.
So, you see you going back again? That people gave the Democratic Labor Party a two-seat majority.
Let me get a view from my guest, because my guest isn't touching it at all. One of the things I love about it, you see, I told you about his run-up and his delivery. Cheese on bread. He's got a smooth run-up. Good afternoon. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, Mr. Ellis, and your family and everything. And then he starts off. Let me tell you, it's wonderful to watch you in action here.
But I am placing the facts before you.
Well, I've given you an opinion. And I enjoy talking with you every time.
But remember this, you are giving an opinion, but I'm giving the facts.
Okay.
All right.
I ain't even going to chase you on that.
Yeah, you take care of you and the others.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good afternoon. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Thank you. And I want to also greet Reverend Guy. Welcome him back.
Oh, this is...
It is good to hear your voice.
Mr. Alex McDonald.
Indeed. Mr. Ellis, I just wanted to just address this thing of the competitiveness and ease of doing business.
Yeah.
Because it is something I think that people misunderstand quite a bit. If you were to take a look at our processes and so on, it is true that we probably have not done worse in that it takes 10 days to get something done. And we've been doing that for a long time. So we haven't become worse. But the critical thing is, what have others done? And so when you're talking about the ease of doing business and competitiveness, whereas in the past, we would have been among the best in the Caribbean with our 5 days to turn around a document and 10 days to get this done. In the intervening period, other countries have said, well, let's look at what the Bajans are doing and try and do a little bit better than them, because we're competing for the same investment and so on. So the marker, if we use an internal marker, we have not done worse. But if we use an external marker, a marker that says, what are the people who are competing with us, what are they doing? Then we would have seen how much we would have slipped in terms of getting these processes done correctly and swiftly. And that, I think, is where we as a country, we need to start realizing that our markers and our value should not be what we do as an internal market, but certainly what we see as we're competing in the wider world, and we have to do better than just saying, well, we think we can get this document processed in 4 days, and that's a great turnaround. Not if everyone is doing it in 8 hours. And that, I think, is some of the things that we need to start looking at, and not be only internally driven, but look at the external drivers, what's going on in the rest of the world, if you really want to be competing and participating. I just wanted to make that the intervention, just to let us know that we have slipped, and there's no sense in hiding it. We have slipped from where we were in terms of leading in the region, and I think that we can do better. Why we slipped is, open for debate, but the fact is we have to face it and fix it.
Yeah, I think it's important to identify why we slip, though. You know, I think it's more complex than a lot of people want to recognize and admit. And until we get down into the nitty-gritty of that, I don't think we're going to go anywhere. Merely exhorting people to do better is not going to do it.
Yeah, the first fact, though, is that if we start with why have we slipped, we then start to get into a blaming thing. The first thing to do is to realize we have slipped and not to just say, oh, no, we really
haven't. I think it's well recognized that we've slipped.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, but the blaming game is.
Didn't seem to want to recognize.
He might not want to admit that. Admission is one thing, but then rectifying it becomes even more challenging than that. And if we go right across the board in this country, I mean, I've seen a discussion about people from government offices coming out, newly built government offices, complaining about, you know, the circumstances, the conditions, the environmental conditions. I have seen complaints about people going to the doctor and getting sick leave on a significant, you know, to a significant degree. I have seen people agitated and trying to get out of their work situation. We have heard of people in the public service opting to go home earlier than they really should have, and people who had a contribution to make. We have a much bigger problem in this country than we want to admit. It is not one problem. It's a mix of problems.
Mr. Ellis, may I just add, the lens that you can look at it is through a lens of people, processes, and tools.
Yes.
So do we have the people in place, the numbers, the right people in the right places? Do we have the right processes? Are they fit for purpose? And do we have the right tools? And I think if you start to measure and mesh those three concepts together, you will see that the people issue is speaks to also about the culture. You know, do we have the right people to deliver a fit for purpose civil service and private sector? Because it's not only limited really to the public sector. You know, we have to retool our private sector as well. Do we have the right processes? Many of the things that we do are done because they did not take into account the fact that there would be document management, that there would be email, and so on. And
look,
do we have the right tools? And this is where Senator McConney has to really, I think, take a look at these things. You know, e-signatures and all of those other things that accelerate
the people-to-people relationships in Barbados are very poor. And I'm telling you that we are ignoring that and putting the focus on all sorts of other stuff. But if you are in an organization or in a company and you are going to consume too much of your time fighting internal battles, you cannot fight against your competition. You cannot fight against the world out there, the Singapores and those other people that are putting themselves on a more competitive path. And that a lot of that is happening in Barbados. And I want to suggest to you too that you have to also let me just make the other point. You also have to put into all of this the role of the trade union yesterday and today. Are we seeing a decline because the trade union either has had too much power or because it has less, because you have more of what you see as these independent contractors who are not represented in that way? All of that we got to analyze, right?
Yeah, I think the danger that we will face, though, and I do agree with you that the people side of the issue will be the critical one. That would be, you know, the acceptance of all the other things is dependent really on looking at the people side. But the danger that we will face is if we think that we have to fix something first. We have to do a lot of things at the same time.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So that we have to look at our people issue, but people issues take a longer time than, say, putting the tech technology and processing first.
Yes.
And we have to do those things almost in lockstep with each other. The culture change, the process changes, and the technology changes are going to be something that's going to have to be very skillfully managed, because, as you say, if you have a burnt-in culture, you're going to have to really think through what is it that we want. And I think some of the big questions that we will have to ask ourselves as a nation is, what do we want our country to look like in 10, 15, 20, 25 years?
There's one other point I'll put to you.
And how do you want to treat with each other?
It has to do with, we spend a lot of time highlighting the things that do not work well.
Mm-hmm.
We spend too little time highlighting those organizations and institutions that do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbados, if we are to come out of this, we're going to have to look more at that end of it. We used to do, I can't remember the last time I heard about it, but I know that we used to identify, I think it was the BIDC, they would have a list of companies every year that were celebrated as the ones that were doing well. I think companies like Gildan.
NICE is also.
Oh, I haven't heard much about NICE in recent times.
We're doing best practices.
Yes, but celebrating that more, to me, that matters.
Yeah, I think the celebration of things, as a culture, we seem not to praise very easily. I don't know where that is from, but we can do better. But I think the reason that people focus on the negative is because they're surrounded by the instances which are really the irritation in their life, and they kind of complain about those loudest. And fixing and doing things right, I think, are the things that we should look at, but we have to recognize that there is a mammoth task in terms of all of us. I mean, nobody has ever come to anyone and said, you know, nothing is wrong. But yet, when they themselves have service to issue and to deliver, they themselves are not doing a great job either. They know when they're not getting good service, they know when they're not doing things well, but they also are not prepared to say, well, I myself am not doing a really good job either. And that's a moment of truth with yourself that we have to also have on an individual basis.
All right. Thank you very much for coming back. Now to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Is this Mr. Ellison?
Yes, there? It is.
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Don Marshall. I'm calling to make a contribution. And
Don Marshall, yeah.
I also want to say greetings to your guest there, Mr. Guy Hewitt.
Yeah.
Greetings, my brother.
Yes, greetings. Two quick comments. The Sir Arthur Lewis Institute has been the institution responsible for putting out the statistics that speak to Barbados' competitiveness in the World Economic Forum's produce report, which is the Global Competitiveness Report. And their methodology requires that they cover, well, small countries canvass the views of 80 businesses, right? In our context in the region, ours will be small and medium-sized businesses. And we get their views, the views of the business executives, in terms of the ease of doing business, among other questions. However, we have had in the last 2 to 3 years to engage in a conversation with them about such a number. So we've been, well, not just us, but other small states have been given a task of canvassing the views of 50 companies. And again, because these companies are suffering from survey fatigue, we've had to ask for a gap year. So you will find that the last report done will be probably 2016, and we're gearing up for the 2019 report. So if there's no 2017 and 2018 report, it's because or they've understood the point of us not going to this business community constantly in our small states to ask the same set of questions every year, which generally yield the same kinds of responses. So I say that as a preliminary or a preface to the discussion, the very rich discussion that yourself and Alex MacDonald just shared about the ease of doing business and other wider culture issues. And I would just want to say that sometimes I think we need to connect some conversations in order to get a better understanding of the crisis that we face. The ease of doing business globally is one that would see countries, as Alex had said, try to better the other. So obviously if it's 10 days to get certain things done, if that was a standard that Barbados had over the other Caribbean countries, increasingly other countries try to reduce that time and so on. But you should keep something in mind. Countries that do, that have citizenship by investment programs or that have international business as a key aspect of their profile have to be very careful in trying to reduce the procedures in relation to the ease of doing business to the point where they may find themselves accused for not engaging in due diligence. So I'll just stick a pin there and say that I would just stick a pin there and say the ease of doing business should remain a key concern. Obviously, if we were to create a more business-friendly climate, but we will do so keeping in mind that attention to due diligence is equally important to ensure that we are not blacklisted and that kind of thing.
True, but you also have to pay attention to corruption in a society too, because
that's right.
if you have too much of that. What happens is that processes are slowed down because the only way they can
be speeded up
is by pushing money in somebody's hands. So
that's right. Very, very much true. The second point is related. Right now, we know the country is in the crisis that it's in. Much of the discussion that Dr. Greenidge and others engage, they speak to different publics, is this whole question of wooing and attracting foreign investment. But we don't get sufficient discourse about trends, you know, in foreign direct investment. Globally, since 2000, major foreign investment has taken on the character of foreign portfolio investment. That is investment that is short-term in horizon, is geared and oriented towards real estate prospecting, insurance, banking. It's also geared towards real estate, office property development, building hotels, that kind of thing. It's not really investment in R&D, plant, equipment, labor market adjustments. In other words, what we call investment in the real economy.
You know, you are opening up a very rich area for pursuit when it comes to discussion. And I know we don't have enough time. So this, I'm giving you this assurance that within the coming days, we want to have you come with us as a guest so that we can talk through some of these issues, okay? It's important that we do
so.
No
problem.
I have one question for you, though. You may consider it mischievous, but I have to ask it nonetheless.
Go on.
You went public and said that if we had gone to the IMF, you were going to march. What happened?
I am very serious about that. I am going to engage in a form of resistance, a protest.
A form of resistance?
Yeah. No.
Can you tell us, can you give me some insight into what form that resistance will take?
I'm prepared to engage in public lectures saying why we did not need to go to the IMF.
You abandoned the march, though, the one-man protest.
Well, I have to think responsibly. One of the things, me going out there will just be a media catching event, and that doesn't really, I don't think that would be as effective as if I say that there are other avenues to which Barbados could and should have sought investment.
So when you made that utterance, you were less than responsible?
No, when I made that utterance, is because I feel so strongly about it that I feel that I should engage in some form of resistance and protest. I would not rule that out, however, but I continue being someone that has, I'm prepared to work with whomever, whichever policy group or whatnot, to say to them, look, there are other options. We need to explore them. Already G20 countries are exploring them and avoiding the short-term lending that we get from the IMF and others with all those conditionalities. This is unnecessary. It's just that the number of dominant elites have advised and have burst this country with such
We will stay in touch. Thank you very much. And Reverend Guy, Thanks for being with us today.
It was my pleasure.
Look forward to having you back with us sometime soon as well. Okay. And thanks to Dennis Johnson for functioning as my producer and technical operator. And thanks, of course, to all of you who participated in the program as callers and as listeners. I'm David Ellis. You have a great afternoon.